When the cool of the morning sunlight, when the mountain calls my name, I can tell by the song of the whispering trees, I will never be the same. In the cool of the morning sunlight, when the mountain calls my name.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective. And I'm your host, Chris Wilson. The show airs on Wednesday at 5 o'clock after the calendar, and again on Saturday at 12:30. Today, I am very pleased to be talking to poet, author, teacher, Holly Hughes. Holly J. Hughes, if you're looking her up on the internet. Holly is a local resident, and this interview is long overdue. Today, we're going to be talking about her 2009 book, Beyond Forgetting, Poetry and Prose About Alzheimer's Disease. I'd like Holly to start with a reading from the preface of her book.
Thank you, Chris. I'm delighted to be here. My mother died of Alzheimer's disease at dusk on the last day of April in 2001. At 75, she was still in good physical health. She had danced a polka just a few weeks before, so her death from this disease seemed all the more tragic. For my family, her illness had been a slow process of subtraction as we lost her one brain cell, one synapse at a time. She had been an articulate, vivacious woman, and we had to watch her lose not just her memory, but all that went with it. Intelligence, judgment, dignity, all that we believe makes us conscious human beings. As the disease took away more and more of the person I had known as my mother, I had to look hard to see what was left. I tried to be with her where she was, but she drifted out of reach of reason, of our accepted ways of being in the world. How could I stay beside her in this journey? Words may have failed her, but I still had them. As with any grief that feels unspeakable, I turned to poetry. Gradually, the practice of writing gave me entry into another world. A world larger than the small room where my mother's life ended. Writing poems made it possible to see that even in the darkest stretches, there were still moments of grace. Her delight in seeing the scarlet flash of a cardinal at the feeder. Rare glimmers of recognition in her blue eyes. Funny conversations as the letters of her alphabet piled up. The losses may have been beyond imagining, but so were the unexpected gifts. Because she no longer had a past or future, she showed us how to live in the present. Writing poems became a way to witness honestly, while reminding me to dwell in the present alongside my mother. In our culture, we often talk about dementia only in the abstract, as a label, not in all its bittersweet concreteness. I began to look for other writing that helped me through, that might help me through this uncharted terrain. Each time I found a poem in which it was clear the writer knew this territory, I felt less alone. When I began to share the poems I'd written about my mother at readings, I came to realize how prevalent this disease is by the fact that a knot of people always gathered afterward to tell the story of their mother, father, husband, wife, sister, brother. I began envisioning a collection of poems that might serve us all. And I'll stop reading here because I think it's easier to talk a little bit about the process. But that's how the whole thing started. It started with my mother.
Mm-hmm. And there is also a wonderful foreword by Tess Gallagher, who also became part of your community in this community of caregivers that are so isolated. Tell us a little bit about how you and people in Port Townsend that you know and are good friends, how this project came into fruition.
That's a great question, Chris, and it's actually really relevant for Port Townsend because I was actually in an MFA program that was founded founded by Stan Rubin and Judith Kitchen, who were also Port Townsend residents, the Rainier Riding Workshop.
Both of them have been interviewed on this program.
Oh, great. I'm not surprised. It was a wonderful program, and one of the components of the program was that we had to do what's called an outside experience, a project connected to riding. I was going through all this with my mother at the time, and I began, as I was saying in the preface, I knew that a collection would be helpful to people. And so having the requirement of the MFA program gave me the little boost. And Judith Kitchen was also very supportive. I moved ahead. Then the other piece of it, and again, tribute to good friends, is that I knew Tess Gallagher, and I knew that she and I were going down this path together with our mothers. And so it really helps to have company, and she agreed that if I put it together, she would write a foreword for it. And that really made it possible for me to move forward with it. So I'm so grateful for that. And she wrote a beautiful foreword.
Mm-hmm. And then you put it out there into the literary world. And what happened?
Well, this is the, you know, the power of the internet. You know, I just put out a call for submissions. And I think I also had posted something in Poets and Writers. And within a few weeks, I had hundreds of submissions. I mean, my email box was constantly full. My mailbox was full. I had over 500 submissions just in a couple months' time because people were forwarding it really, mm-hmm. literally around the world. I had submissions from Europe and India, and it just amazed me how far the call went. But clearly there was a need for it, and it struck a chord. I think I wasn't alone in feeling that people were responding in writing.
I think these are not only caregivers, but spouses, daughters, doctors, nurses, even an insurance adjuster.
That's right.
who've been touched by the last years of someone who is fading away from them. I think, actually, you know, the poems in this book can be meaningful to people who are saying goodbye to their parents or their loved ones through other diseases as well. And it's not all sadness. I want to say that I laughed during reading these. I felt a grace. I felt some ideas about how to deal with the suffering that people feel.
Good.
And so I am hoping that, you know, that's what you had a group of editors that right. went through right. all of this and found certain submissions that really struck you. How did you organize it? How did you decide to do that?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's a couple questions kind of embedded in that. I mean, first, the process of reading through all the submissions, I mean, that was one of the hardest things I had to do, was to reject some of them because they were all heartfelt. And I wanted to take them all and I couldn't. I've been told I wrote the nicest rejection letter. But I did. I realized I couldn't make the decision alone. And I turned to my colleagues for help. And we gathered and spent a whole afternoon, actually several afternoons, just reading through them, passing them around. But one of the decisions we made, and I really appreciate that you noticed this, Chris, is that we wanted to include the full range of emotions. And so we were delighted to find a piece with some humor in it, because that's the reality of going down this path. So I wanted the whole spectrum of emotion. Mm-hmm. And then once I'd selected all the pieces, I retreated to Tess has a beautiful house that overlooks the Straits of Juan de Fuca called Sky House. And I just needed a place where I could spread everything out and not be disturbed, not on my kitchen table. And so I just went and spent a weekend there with the sound of the waves in the background. And the pieces really organize themselves. You know, I just kind of grouped them thematically, and it really was kind of a magical process. I just had to kind of listen to the poems, and they told me where they wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. And you titled certain chapters. Let's look at some of these poems. We've been talking for a little
sure.
bit, and I know that we've piqued the interest of our listeners of wanting to hear a few of these poems. One of them that I and both of us thought this would be a good one to share, Your True Life by Linda Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you read that one for us?
Okay. Your True Life. You lost track of things, burnt the toast, forgot to pay the phone bill. One day, you could not decide the way home. Someone took you by the hand and led you. Now everything is made simple, all answered by a smile or a nod. In the late afternoon, you watch ducks gather, spread over the shining lake. Those who knew you when your mind tangled with a thousand worries whisper behind you, regret this stillness. Yet here is your true life, the bright, unruffled water, a sudden lift of wings. I was so glad you chose this poem, Chris. This is one of my favorite poems in the book. It's hard to choose a favorite, but this is right up there. This is by Linda Alexander. One of the things I did when I was putting this collection together is I received the poems, I received a cover letter with each poem, and the cover letters were provided some context, and they were so moving. I remember reading them in the wee hours of the morning. I was teaching full-time and in the MFA program, and that was the only time I had, and I'd be weeping. So what I decided to do, and this is not typical of a book of poems, you know, most purist poetry readers and writers think poems should stand alone, but I really wanted this book to be a companion, and I wanted people to feel less alone, that they weren't going down this path without some company. And so I asked each poet to include a little context for their poem. And this is what Linda Alexander wrote. It is a challenge for a poet to understand a life without speech. Harder still to watch a man of words like my father, journalist Holmes Alexander, fall into such deep silence. Yet the simple, shining peace of sitting with him as he gave up the daily struggle the rest of us are so immersed in became for me a beautiful kind of meditation. So even now after his death, when I sit observing the small movements of the natural world, momentarily I can remember what matters.
So to me, this poem helps remind us of being present, that life is a struggle and acceptance. And yeah. of course, the solitude and the solace of the natural world. So thank you for choosing this poem. We talked about humor. I have one called Early Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I was delighted when this one came in, and I was also delighted that I had a chance to meet the poet, Cheryl Nelms, when I gave a reading down in Houston, which I've been thinking about a lot this last week. As you mentioned, I receive poems from insurance adjusters, and this is the one. So I'll read her little comment first, because it gives us a little context. The poem is called Early Alzheimer's. I make a living as an insurance adjuster. This poem came from a claim that I had at work. It was a true story. The value of writing is ongoing. So here's the poem. Emma set her kitchen on fire because she forgot she was cooking. But the water gushing through the ceiling for the bath she forgot she was taking put it out.
Choose to laugh, right?
Choose to laugh. That's
and
right.
This is good poem to remember Harvey, which I'm sure as this show airs and continues, we will be talking about it. One of your chapters is called My Mind is a Cold Oven. I think this is...
And, you know, it's interesting that when I look at this collection, I did not receive, at least that I was aware of, nobody identified themselves as somebody with dementia when they sent their work in. I would have loved to have taken more. At that time, I'm not sure, I don't know how to account for it. Now I think there's much more writing going on. And if I were to do a second edition, that's definitely a change I would make, because I would want to include poetry by people who are living with dementia. So this poem by Lana Hechtman Ayers, I was really glad to be able to include. So I'll go ahead and read My Mind is a Cold Oven. 1. Alzheimer's Warning Signs. Asks the same question repeatedly. What day is it today? Trouble performing familiar tasks, like preparing a meal. How can this meatloaf be raw after an hour? Forgets simple words or forgets what certain objects are called. Have you seen my, those metal things that open doors? Gets lost in own neighborhood and does not know how to get home. Was that traffic light always there? Has trouble figuring out a bill. 5 and 7 is carry the 2. Repeatedly forgets where things were left or puts things in inappropriate places. How did my watch get in the freezer? Becomes very passive, requires prompting to become involved. No, no, no thanks, really. Two, on the 5-minute ride home, street names do-si-do, and I am lost, swinging left, 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 before the neighborhood rights itself, and I am back, two-stepping up to my front door. Three, this watch face hides time from me as my doctor's appointment soups its way into abyss. Neurologist says dementia, but trained in math, I hear dimension, dimensions, impossible typologies of end space, so complex and vast, they are terrained with Klein bottles, trains on Mobius track that never get where they're going. Five, the oven's cold, no supper. I'm losing weight without trying. Who knew dieting could be this easy?
We're talking to Holly Hughes, and today we're talking about a book that she wrote in 2009 called Beyond Forgetting, Poetry and Prose About Alzheimer's Disease. It seems like the more we know, the less we know here in the world of Alzheimer's and senility, and so many of our friends are caregivers or people that are worried about it. And so when I met Holly one day early this summer, she said, well, let's get together and talk about this book again, because I'm finding that people want to hear about it. So that's why we're here today. I'm pleased to be talking to Holly. We're doing readings from her book, and we'll also talk some more about her and her own writings later on in the program. The book's called Beyond Forgetting. Can you talk a little bit to us about the multiple meanings and the meanings personally for you in the title that you chose?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, you know, that title came to me early on, and it really was the working title through the whole project, and thankfully the publishers also liked it. There was a wonderful anthology edited by Carolyn Forche called Against Forgetting, and I guess it's sort of an echo of that, but obviously the title Beyond Forgetting has to do with memory, right? But also that the people we're losing are beyond forgetting. And that's one of the things I wanted to do in this collection, is to honor their lives and remind us all that there is more to our life. And Tess writes about this beautifully in her foreword, that there is more to our life than just forgetting, than just what we remember and what we forget. And if I can have a minute, I can read that passage from her. It's very powerful. I do believe that those dealing with Alzheimer's may witness and help their loved ones more than survive. They may lead us beyond forgetting to the sites of meaning by which we continue to companion each other against seemingly relentless odds. Their knowledge within the community may move consciousness of the malady, loss of memory, past this identifying disqualification of disease. We may mistakenly think memory eclipses other human abilities when it most surely does not. I think that's just such a good reminder, and that's one of the things that I realized with my mother, is that in our culture we tend to place so much value on language and memory, and yet when I was able to be with her where she was, I could see that she was still there. She was still there with me.
Let's look at your poem now, Holly. I think that this your poem and your personal experience with your own mom, the poem is called The Bath. Just the bond between mothers and daughters is so profound, and this poem said that to me.
Good. Thank you. This is one of the poems that I wrote that I would share at readings that people would come up and ask for copies of. The Bath. The tub fills inch by inch. As I kneel beside it, trail my fingers in the bright braid of water. Mom perches on the toilet seat, entranced by the ritual until she realizes the bath's for her. Oh no, she says, drawing her three layers of shirts to her chest, crossing her arms and legs. Oh no, I couldn't, she repeats, brow furrowing, that look I now recognize like an approaching squall. I abandon reason, the hygiene argument, promise a Hershey's bar if she will just please take off her clothes. Oh no, she repeats, her voice rising. Meanwhile, the water is cooling. I strip off my clothes, step into it, let the warm water take me completely, slipping down until only my face shines up, a moon mask. Mom stays with me, interested now in this turn of events. I sit up. Will you wash my back, Mom? So much gone, but let this still be there. She bends over to dip the washcloth in the still warm water, squeezes it, lets it dribble down my back, leans over to rub the butter pad of soap, swiping each armpit, then rinses off the suds with long practice strokes. I turn around to thank her, catch her smiling, lips pursed, humming. Still a mother with a daughter whose back needs washing.
Let's talk about the healing power of art. There were so many poems that brought this to mind, and of course, just putting this anthology together. How did it help you, and how do you hope that it helps those who read it?
That's a great question, Chris. Before I answer it, can I make one comment about the bath before I move on? In reading The Bath, every time I read it, I am taken back to that moment with my mother. And just a couple things I wanted to sort of say about that. It was one of those moments with my mother where I realized I had to be in the moment with her. And once I could accept that she wasn't going to take a bath and that I could do what I needed to do, it sort of magically transformed, as the poem suggests, into a really healing, tender moment for both of us. But the other thing I wanted to say about it is that this poem is now became a good friend of mine, Mark Lunston, made a short art film that features the bath. It takes the story of the bath at its core. It's a beautiful art film. If you Google Fidalgo Films in the Bath, you can watch the trailer. And he took the story of his own mother and sort of interwove our stories together. So I just wanted to let people know about that beautiful film. The question about arts, I think arts more and more, as we were working with my mother, going down this difficult path with her, we realized the value of arts, all the arts, music especially. For her, when she couldn't remember our names, when she had trouble putting a sentence together, she could still sing whole choruses of Broadway musicals. She loved to sing and she loved to dance. And towards the end of her life, that was really, we tried to make sure that her quality of life was good, we would bring in music. And that would always cheer her up. That was always something she could participate in. And I'm grateful to see that more and more there are programs that allow people with dementia to paint or to do music. Obviously, I feel really strongly that the arts play a critical role in providing quality of life. And I think they also remind us again that we are more than just our logical left brain, that we are full creative beings all the way to the end. But I think reading poetry can help us as well as writing it. So there are many things people can do in addition to writing. I do teach a class and a workshop on writing for caregivers. It's more journal writing, but because I think caregivers really need, oftentimes they don't have a lot of time to themselves. They need a place to vent. And writing is a great way to do that. All you need is a pencil and a notebook or your laptop.
This seems to be a good time to mention the North Cascades Institute. So every year you take part and are one of the teachers in Sit, Walk, Write, Nature and the Practice of Presence. This year it's at the end of September. If you're interested in it, listeners, you can go to the North Cascades Institute. But it sounds like a wonderful way to be in nature, be in the North Cascades, and be a writer with some help.
And thank you, Chris. And I just want to also mention the name of my co-collaborator, Kurt Holting, who teaches meditation. Mm-hmm. And he's a wonderful meditation instructor and lives on Whidbey Island, so he's local. We've been doing this together for years now. He's an old friend. So please consider joining us.
Now, some of the people that are listening here may know you more for your other writings, so I don't want to let you go without talking about them. They know you as a sailor, a woman on the water. So you've written a book called Sailing by Ravens. That's such an evocative title. I haven't read it yet, and I want to. And also another called chapbook called Passings.
Sailing by Ravens is a collection of poems that I wrote after I had a slight digression in my life. I went up to Alaska to make money for graduate school and ended up buying a commercial fishing boat and gillnetting.
Well, that's the way to make money.
For eight years. Actually, I gillnetted for 4 years and then ran tenders with my former husband for four years. And these poems came out of that time period in Alaska. I fell in love with navigation and did get my captain's license to run boats. But the poems really use navigation as their principal metaphor. So I had a wonderful time. It gave me an excuse to read up on the history of maps and, you know, all the beautiful arcane navigation equipment. So it was really a fun book to put together. And the title, Sailing by Ravens, actually came from a book that another local, Barbara Schoholm, lent me about a sailor named Flocky who discovered Iceland by sailing with a cage of ravens. And he would release a raven and the raven would fly towards land. So I love that metaphor.
That's great inspiration.
Yeah.
And now Passings. Tell us about it as well.
Yeah. So the bird fascination continues. I have always been fascinated by birds. And when I was in Alaska many years ago, I was in a bookstore in Sitka and picked up a copy of the Audubon print of The Passenger Pigeon, that beautiful kind of iconic print, and woke up one morning and looked at it, and it seemed to be calling for a poem. And so I wrote a poem and then decided that she needed company. Martha needed company. Martha referring, of course, to the last passenger pigeon in the Smithsonian. And I found that there was no shortage, unfortunately, of other birds who are extinct, and just began this collection just slowly over time. So I include the kind of the predictable birds, the passenger pigeon, the dodo, of course. But I also found some birds that are perhaps less well known, the great auk. I ended up just choosing 15. There are more, but 15 seemed to be enough. Then I wrote a little foreword and afterward, and I really finished it because of climate change, changing the ranges and habitats of many birds. And there's now concern that more birds are threatened with extinction. And so I thought it was important that the birds, that we listen to them, that we give them a voice. And that was my role, is just allowing them to speak.
You have been listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and we've been talking today to Holly J. Hughes. We've been talking about her book, Beyond Forgetting, Poetry and Prose About Alzheimer's Disease. If you're interested in finding this book or learning about more resources, please go to Holly's website, hollyjhughes.com. Her books, Beyond Forgetting, Sailing by Ravens, and Passings, are all available at Writer's Workshop. Join me next time to talk more about books and authors. Chris Wilson is my name. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kpdz.org, where you can also leave a donation. I'd like to thank Larry Stein, Mike Schlexer, and Kate Ingram for helping me with this program. We're going to go out today listening to music by the Threshold Hospice Choir, In the Cool of the Morning.
Walking each other.